Well, good morning. Wow, what a day, huh? Fall is here for sure. You feel this weather? Just so invigorating and so sparkly.
Am I not talking loud enough into the phone? That's not usually my problem. But I will speak into the ice cream cone, right? Good morning over there. Hi, Peter. Hi, Arlene. Nice to see you guys. Everybody wave to Peter and Arlene. Hi, guys. Nice to see you. And Em. The M is here, too.
That's my dear friend, Margaret.
Well, hi, Margaret. Hi. Welcome aboard on Zoom land out there. Nice. We're glad you're here. And we're glad we're here, too.
Amen to that.
You know, I want to say something about that in a little bit. But, you know, I wanted to welcome you. Welcome to our wonderful Sweethearts Unity Family Band.
Amen.
Thank you very much for being here. And this week, and I'm glad, Doug, you're going to talk about some of the lessons that Dolly Parton has gifted us with. This is a time of the many passings of many people who have gifted us with great, great consciousness and great awareness. Of course, you know that Gloria Steinem passed this week, Wendell Berry, Dolly Parton, and some others.
Say? Oh, Wendell Berry, sorry.
Wendell.
Yeah. Wendell Berry.
Great poet, been read many times here. And I'd just like to note the passing of one of my mentors this week, Dr. Larry Dossey, who was a very, very good friend of mine in Santa Fe. And we spent many long hours in wonderful discussions up on the, he had a bench overlooking the Santa Fe Valley, and we said about what is consciousness and where is it. And he was one of the pioneers in the medical industry of non-local consciousness and the fact that it's there whether we like it or not. So what I'd like to read is just a little bit of, from his Reinventing Medicine book, just a quick phrase here, talking about Era 3. In those days, this is back in the 80s, when they're really talking about people thought consciousness existed in the head. Most of us were there during those periods. We now know that's a myth. But he wrote in 1989, he says, but the greatest contribution of Era 3, he called, in those days you had to kind of cloak your words, couldn't call it non-local consciousness, but you can, of Era 3 medicine, to the healing goes beyond diagnosing disease and eradicating illness. If our minds are generally capable of breaking free from the body, then they are not subject to time. Think about that. The implication of this is so revolutionary, we instinctively dismiss it. Although our bodies die, the timeless part of our consciousness lives on. Era 3 medicine provides a cure, therefore, for the disease that has caused more suffering for more people than any other, the fear of death.
Amen.
Mm. Wonderful man, Larry, rest in peace, and his wife, Barbie. Probably the most noted biographer of Florence Nightingale that there is. And that's his wife, Barbara. Wonderful people. Anyway, should we, speaking of Shirley, the presence, when we talk about presence, what is presence? You're here, I'm here, we're here in our minds, but think of the presence we have in our community.
Amen.
This is the other level of consciousness. So let's all join in Shirley the Presence. Would you guys lead it?
Let's take all that has been expressed up to this point in this service in our history into a place of stillness. Let us do what we can to be present right here and now, opening our hearts and our minds to the presence of mystery. Divine indwelling spirit, we open ourselves to your wisdom, your peace, your eternal presence in our time-boundaried lives. Let us just, breathing deeply and easily, feel some sense of that presence closer to us than our heartbeats, with us each moment of life. And now with this increased awareness, with this sense of letting go and opening up, to God's wisdom and love, let us take these next few moments together to have our Unity of Whidbey prayer open mic. For all those prayers that were offered, for all those that were spoken, for those that were just held in our hearts, that we did not hear on some level, and yet on some level we did. May we see that the arc of the moral universe bends toward good, and may we be a part of that arc. May we work for the good, pray for the good, and be loving servants of the good. Amen. When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water. And I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. The Peace of Wild Things, a poem by Wendell Berry. This talk is titled, What Would Dolly Do? And when I sent that title to Barbara, I did not tax my life with forethought, as Wendell Berry puts it in the poem I just read. But the day after I sent the talk title, Wendell Berry followed Dolly Parton in the transition from this life to the mystery that follows. This led me to reading and sharing his poems this past week, and I realized that these two beings who left the world stage at nearly the same moment shared an Appalachian ethos. Dolly from Tennessee, Berry from that state's northern neighbor, Kentucky. Both Wendell and Dolly celebrated and brought to our consciousness the wild, the crick, and the holler. Dolly grew up in a tiny cabin, one of 12 children, her beloved daddy, illiterate, but the smartest man I've ever known. Wendell Berry, a Kentucky native, moved back to his home state at 30 with his wife, Tanya, and spent the next 60 years horse farming and writing, producing well over 40 books of fiction, essays, and poetry. Both inspired all whose lives they touched. So I want to incorporate Wendell Berry's wisdom and integrity and Dolly Parton's unique country music sainthood into what I share today. We've all heard so much, no doubt, over these past days about the woman whose friends called her the Dolly Mama. And I don't want to wear out the record by repeating the most well-known stories. I do know that with her glamorous persona, and I relate, preemptive humor about her figure, accent, and hillbilly origins, Dolly has to be about the most authentic and original personality in modern America. She's certainly the only one who said things like,
"Well, I've been nipped and tucked more times than a bedsheet."
And,
"Takes a lot of money to look this cheap."
But what was the heart of Dolly Parton's approach to life?
My favorite Dolly quote goes right here. "No one cries alone in my presence."
I truly believe, after taking in so many interviews and stories, that though she had an over-the-top presentation, Dolly's calling in life was that of a consecrated, holy person. I really do. She herself has said that she found God when she was only 12 in an old church with broken windows, a busted piano, and dirty pictures on the wall. And she said, "And I went and added some things to those pictures. I was interested in those." She's at 12. She said that God became real to her there, as strange as that sounds. And from that point, she said, "I talk to God. I just talk to God." She's also said in an interview in the podcast series Dolly Parton's America, "I'm spiritual but not religious," noting that she wasn't a regular churchgoer. What she was a regular songwriter. And in a 2002 interview, she said it this way, "Songwriting is my way of channeling my feelings and thoughts. My head would explode if I didn't get some of that stuff out. Not everything I write is good, but it's all good for me, like therapy." As a songwriter, though far less prolific than she, I do dig that. There's a story that I didn't include in my written text, but I want to share with you now. This might blow your minds. As we all know, Nelson Mandela was imprisoned on Robben Island and other institutions by the South African government for 29 years, I think it was. And I heard an interview with a man who had been in a cell just across the hallway from Mandela's cell. And he said that late in his time at the prison, Mandela was given the privilege of selecting music that could be played on the overhead PA. And what did he pick? Dolly Parton.
Whoa.
The Epistle of James contains a famous quote, and I want to share it now because it may as well have Dolly's picture right by it. "Faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." Faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. As Dolly's Appalachian neighbor, Wendell Berry, said in a 2008 interview, "Love has to be practiced. It has to find something to do. Love isn't just a feeling. It's an instruction. Love one another." "That's hard to do," he said. "It doesn't mean to sit at home and have fond feelings." That's my favorite way of loving people, by the way. "You've got to treat people as if you love them, whether you do or not." And that's what Dolly did throughout her life. At 18, she bravely entered the treacherous waters of Nashville, where so many talented aspirants have drowned or fallen short. And it seems that every success she achieved became part of a mission to love. The writer David French, who lives in Tennessee, tells us that Dolly's death was a seismic emotional moment because she loved us unconditionally, extravagantly. He pointed out that her imagination library alone would represent the legacy of 1,000 lifetimes. In 2018, its 100 millionth book was given to the Library of Congress. In 2023, it gave away its 200 millionth book. By 2024, 1 in 7 children under the age of 5 in America was receiving a book every month from Dolly Parton.
Every month for the first 5 years of their life, so they would always have a library of their own.
And this wasn't just for the U.S. I mean, they were sent to children in Canada, the U.K., Ireland, I think Australia.
England, yeah.
Today, the Imagination Library informs us it's 1 in 6 children in America receiving a book every month from that library. This is love embodied, printed, published, and distributed. In 2016, when wildfires tore through the Great Smoky Mountain region, Dolly gave $1,000 per month to every family in her home county whose house was lost in the conflagration. She then gifted each family a final $5,000. In 2020, with COVID killing tens of thousands monthly, she donated $1 million to Vanderbilt for research that led to the Moderna vaccine. As Wendell Berry points out in his book, Blessed Are the Peacemakers, the Good Samaritan story answers the question asked of Jesus, who is my neighbor? Berry sums up the answer as, your neighbor is any sufferer who needs your help. That would be Dolly's answer as well. But she didn't write an essay about it. Her actions showed it. Dolly never stopped creating and giving and loving. That's what Dolly would do and did. That's what we may aspire to do. It could be that a capacity for empathy was born of her own suffering, at least at one point in her childhood. There's a famous incident where, when her mother made for her what she calls a coat of many colors from a box of rags, her family couldn't afford to get her a new coat, and she treasured the one her mother made with love just for her. But when she wore it to school, her classmates made fun of her, as kids will do when someone is or has something that's different. She wrote a beautiful song from that story in her life, but I don't think the little girl she was then was invulnerable. I bet she felt hurt. But Dolly lived and learned and loved. A particular form of love is something that Dolly was a kind of Olympic champion in, and that is the high art of forgiveness. That would be an area where we would really benefit from following her example and her trail. Because when we fail to forgive, it's hard on our minds, our bodies, and our psyches. It may well be true that most, if not all of us, and when I say us, of course, I don't mean anyone here, I just mean people we know, are more skilled at holding on to our judgments and grudges, no matter what the cost, than we are at letting go of those things and just being loving. It is natural, perhaps. The ego is designed to protect us. It thinks this is its mission. Spirituality says otherwise. And even science disagrees with those who hold on to resentments. For example, forgiveness is linked to improvements in cardiac health. And studies show that people who focus on their grudges and grievances have increased heart rate and blood pressure. You've heard it makes my blood boil when I think about fill in the grievance of your choice. It's just about true. A forgiveness study in the Netherlands asked study subjects to write about either a time when they forgave someone or a time when they did not. Then unexpectedly, the next task assigned to each subject, you'll never guess what this was to jump as high as they could 5 times. I'm assuming these were relatively young people.
I hope so.
And there were no lawsuits from making elders sprain their knees, ankles, ligaments, etc. But get this. Those who wrote about forgiveness had an average vertical leap of about a foot, 11.8 inches. Those who wrote about not forgiving? Well, their consciousness was presumably not as elevated, and neither were their physical selves. The average height of their jumps was 8.5 inches, almost 30% less. So the lesson is, if you're going to compete in volleyball, basketball, or the high jump, forgiveness is essential. And if your name was Dolly Parton, you showed up with forgiveness in a way that is a mind blower, I'm sure you'll agree. In 1967, Dolly began her ascension in the music business when she was invited by Porter Wagoner to become his girl singer. It was definitely a secondary role on his show. He was a big deal in a rhinestone suit, and she was an unknown. Over time, of course, Dolly's star rose higher and higher and higher, and when she reached a point where her role on the show was too restricting, she elected to leave. It was 1974. She'd had four number one hits over the course of a year from late 1973 on, while Porter's own records were way down in the charts. She recounts how she told him, "I can stay on your show," this is really choking me up, "but I have to do other things. I need my own producers. I want to do crossover records," and so forth, but he wouldn't have it. He had her in a sort of box, my little girl singer, and she needed to break out of that box. Dolly said, "I knew I had to go and I was stifled. And by that time, if I'd stayed forever, I might have missed my chance. God was telling me to go. That spirit of mine was saying, go. You've got to go. You've got to go." So she left the Porter Wagoner show. And he sued her for $1 million. As she says, "Well, I didn't have that kind of money." But she didn't fight it. Even though he was making the rounds of the interview shows saying she was a horrible person, I've heard some of the clips, she had signed a contract when she was only 21, giving him rights to percentages of her songwriting and so forth, and she chose to honor that. And she paid the $1 million, a little at a time. Fast forward to 1981. Porter Wagoner was in real financial hardship. He'd made some bad investments, and the IRS was coming after him for $500,000. Dolly Parton said in an interview, "Well, I felt bad for him. And who knows if I would have been a success if he hadn't hired me in 67. I had money then." Porter had a publishing company for songs he had written, which he only started writing after he met Dolly. He said, "Oh, maybe I can do this." And he had some of his songs and a publishing company. And Dolly said, and I bought the publishing company for more money than he needed to settle his debts. Then I gave it back to him so his kids could have it. She goes on and says, I mean, how can you ever thank somebody for giving you a chance? I felt like it was the least I could do. I was glad to do it. It made me feel better about everything else. This is not just forgiveness. This is forgiveness in hypersonic overdrive on steroids. After these statements in the interview, the man interviewing Dolly said, I have a theory that one of the reasons that you can have the crazy broad appeal that you have into so many different communities that normally hate each other, and you know what I'm saying, her shows had trans people next to people in cowboy boots wearing Trump t-shirts next to whatever, right? Everybody was there. She said, this interviewer said, that crazy broad appeal is because of those acts of forgiveness. Does that vibe with you? And Dolly said, yeah, forgiveness? Forgiveness is all there is. Forgiveness is all there is. When Porter Wagner was dying in October 2007, who was with him when he was in hospice? His family and Dolly Parton. And at one point she asked the family if they would leave so she and Porter could be alone. And I just talked to him myself. She said he wasn't responsive then, but she sat and held his hand and she felt like he could understand what she was saying. And I just told him that I loved him. And I appreciated him. And I was so sorry for all the things we'd been through. And I would always remember and treasure him. I will always love you, of course, is the song Dolly wrote when she left his show. And she came to him and said, you know, I'm leaving your show and I want you to hear this song. And she sat in his office and played that song for him. And he said, okay, you can leave if I can produce that record. She said yes. Now, of course, there was that $1 million thing later, which he didn't happen to mention at that meeting. But she put this, I will always love you, into action. I believe our best chance to find this kind of true emotional forgiveness is to deeply open ourselves through prayer, meditation, dedication to the grace of the Spirit. I well imagine this is what Dolly did. I cannot, as a boundaried and defensive ego, which probably will be on my tombstone, I cannot come to forgiveness of everyone or maybe anyone at a core level because my ego's mission is protecting itself. It's grace that can take me to that expansive place where I no longer feel like I have to fight for what I need, where I'm no longer competing with you, but simply loving you. I have felt that grace once or twice. Have you? It may be what Wendell Berry referred to when he said, I rest in the grace of this world and I am free. When I feel it, it's as if I'd been wearing blinders and a welding mask so that I could see only this tiny dark sliver of the world, and then my eyes are open to what is really going on. And I gain a universal perspective that so blows away the puniness of my prior vision that I just laugh at how obsessed I was that you took my parking space or my cookie, or even that you truly hurt me. I'm connected to something deeper, purer, vaster, and more brilliant, and I'm no longer in the rat race, no longer in the game. Lifted above this petty plane, I'm suddenly in God's world. That's the grace I seek. The transformation that makes real forgiveness possible. When love in me comes from something greater than myself, the peace that passes all understanding. That's when I feel myself at one with Wendell Berry's philosophy, with Dolly Parton's empathy, and even with these following words, penned by yet another Appalachian spiritual presence, the great Thomas Merton, whose Kentucky hermitage was just a couple of hours up the road from Wendell Berry's farm.
Oh.
What Merton wrote that I want to close with is this. I'm just hesitating to get the sound of the airplane a little bit farther away from our audio space. May these words represent an aspiration for all of us. Merton wrote, "For myself, I have only one desire, the desire for solitude to disappear into God, to be submerged in God's peace, to be lost in the secret of God's face, to be lost in the secret of God's face, to be one." May we be lost in that secret. May we be one. Amen.